A lot of times I think I've mentioned that I'll have a subject or two that I'm thinking about, maybe three or four of them that I'm thinking about doing for my lesson. And they're almost always a lesson that is useful for me. And I always try to find a lesson that might be useful for the members here and for the visitors that we have that join us from time to time. This one I've had down on my dining room table for about 2 or 3 weeks now, the idea of vigilance. We talk about steadfastness and surety and being strong and being faithful and all these things, but two of my favorite passages in the Bible talk about vigilance, and the idea is certainly much deeper than just those two passages or three passages if you go back to an instance from the Old Testament we'll be talking about today. And as we tend to do from time to time, or at least I do, for our Facebook page on our website or from the pictures for the church site, or for the lessons that I use, I go back to unsplash.com, and they have, it's a royalty-free website. I think I've talked to you about them before, but they have members support putting images up on there, and sometimes they have some that are just a perfect fit for the lesson. And as you can see, hopefully you recognize what's going on the screen behind me there, the idea of vigilance. I think the ant, above all animals, as small as they are some of the most vigilant. And scriptural, we're even going to begin our lesson talking about them from scripture. But they are so busy. They are always focused on doing something, always trying to do it, and always for the better of the whole, not for the individual. And as you can see, these ants, and a lot of times you've seen documentary films from places like Africa and South America, some of these ants are enormous. But sometimes you look at a tree and all you'll see is this bunch of things going up the tree. And here they're taking leaves, these ants are carrying them and taking them back to their where their home is. And where one's taking things back to the home, the other ones are heading back the other way to go get something. They're very vigilant animals, and we'll see that as we get into the lesson tonight, or this morning. So the passage we're going to go to is Proverbs chapter 6. Verses 6 through 11, you can see it up on the board behind me. And in this proverb, it's just trying to remind the reader that there are some things in life that we see around us that we may not think too much about, but can teach us great lessons. And I think when you look at the whole of the Bible, from what Jesus says to the things that we see in the Old Testament over and over, what even God has these discussions with Job in the book of Job, looking to nature and looking to the creation of God and the things that we see around us every day, just to stick into our minds and saying, hey, when you see this, think about these things. New King James, Proverbs chapter 6, it says, go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which, having no captain, overseer or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. And then it contrasts that. Okay, so you've got this ant that's always doing these things. It's always being diligent to take care of its home, its group of other ants there in the colony that it lives in. And it transitions and says, how long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. And then it tells you the problem with that. So shall your poverty come upon you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. And that last little bit seems extra poignant there. Your need like an armed man. What's being said there in Proverbs? It means that when somebody comes up to you and they've got a gun, or they have a bow in these days, or maybe they had a rock or club or whatever at the time of this writing in Proverbs, if somebody's coming up and they're threatening you for something, you know you'll give them whatever you have. And I think that's what's being made a point here. If all you've done is just kind of wait around for something to happen, you've not worked on the things in life that you need to be working on, when you finally need something, those things are going to be urgently needed, and you're not going to be able to do anything about it. So just a good memory for us to think about. And because I like that image, it stays on the bottom of all of our slides today, so just constantly be sticking that into your mind as we're talking about vigilance. So what is vigilance? I have not done the definitions in a while, but I wanted to go back to that. And a definition that I decided to use this morning for vigilance, it says the action or state of keeping a careful watch for possible danger or difficulty. So if you're telling somebody, you maybe read in your Bible or you've read a story that you like, and it says people were being vigilant about something. Well, what were they being vigilant about? What What does that mean? It means, well, they knew something could possibly happen. Maybe nothing would happen, but they wanted to make sure that they were very diligent, another similar word here, to be careful that something didn't happen. And I think when you go back and you look in either scripture or secular history around the kingdoms of the world, I think Kyle said he talked about kingdoms last week. He may have even talked about this in his lesson. I haven't listened to it yet. But a lot of times when you had these fortified cities or cities that had walls around them, there would be people that would be appointed around the gates of the city or even outside the city to watch for nighttime intruders. They were vigilant. They were being vigilant for the safety of themselves and for their people. Breaking the word down a little bit simpler, vigil, what's that mean? The definition I looked up, this is a period of keeping awake during the time usually spent asleep, especially to keep watch or pray, and we'll have a great example of that here shortly. But the idea of keeping vigil is just basically what vigilance is. It's always being careful, watch. And as we talked about the ant, and we talked about the sluggard, as that talked about in Proverbs, the sluggard's problem was the sluggard kept wanting to go to sleep, where the ant was busy doing things. Certainly all animals have to rest at some point, but sometimes individuals, maybe even some of us in our spiritual activities, tend to get a little bit sleepy. And as I talked about, sometimes the folding of the hands, we just take a rest for a little bit too long. And what I had on there, it's not complacency. Complacency is the opposite of vigilant or vigilance there. Complacency, and we'll see that when we get into some of the antonyms of this word in just a moment, it's just saying, okay, I'm happy with how things are, I'll just stay this way. And I think in all the things we talked about on our Bible studies, Wednesday night and Sunday night, even 2 years past, that's one of the biggest problems of God's people is complacency. I'm happy right now, nothing's going wrong, I'm just going to stay like this. And I think all of us that are homeowners understand that you can't have a home remain in good shape if you're just content to let it stay that way forever. So many things, and I'll try to get going. I've got a lot of slides today, but most of them don't have a whole lot of content. So synonyms for vigilance. I like to throw the idea of doing some work on... let me see. I think I've got a list here that should have been on there, but maybe not. Okay. Well, some synonyms for vigilance. You got synonyms and antonyms. We're going to get into those as we go through here. And I've basically taken scripture that seems to focus on some of these synonyms or antonyms. And we know a synonym is a word that means the same thing as the word vigilance in this case. Antonym is words that mean the opposite of or are contrary to that. And two of the words there is alertness and caution. I want to look at the word caution in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, 1 through 3. It says, walk prudently when you go into the house of God. Draw near and hear rather than to give sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they do evil. We talked about the sacrificial system. Brad's been talking about it on Wednesday night. We've been talking about Egypt for a lot of this time, but that's how we began that study. Sometimes what God says to do is all we get fixated on, and we forget about the deeper things, the more personal things. And that's exactly what's being talked about in Ecclesiastes. Say, okay, you know to sacrifice, you're doing sacrifices, but you're missing things. And Jesus even talked about some of the people at his time that they were so focused in on certain things, they were missing the more important. And it continues on, it says, do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, and you are on earth. Therefore, let your words be few. For a dream comes through much activity, and a fool's voice is known by his many words. The idea of being prudent and drawing near and listening. It says, draw near to hear rather than to give sacrifice of fools. Don't just show up to do your button pushing. Show up to listen to what's being talked about. Another synonym for the word vigilance is the word diligence. I talked about that earlier. What's a passage that we can look for that? Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 says, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. I want you to think about that for just a moment. You know, sometimes we all put seeds into pots or we put them into our gardens. Well, whatever we get out of that is what that seed was. The time that we spent fostering that plant is what the produce is going to be. What are we putting into our hearts? And that's what we're going to get out of it. So we need to think about that. Three other synonyms for the word vigilance. Surveillance. You see that so much with military things. Acuity, being very keen. Or almost you see the word acuity used with people that are very smart and they're doing very smart things. Or attention. Attention, we're going to look at 2 Kings chapter 21. And it says, I will not make the feet of Israel wander any more from the land which I gave their fathers. Only, and here's the caveat, if they are careful to do according to all that I have commanded them. Very similar statement that we had from Kyle's lesson today. And according to all the law that my servant commanded them. But they paid no attention, and Manasseh seduced them to do more evil than the nations whom the Lord had destroyed before the children of Israel. So God's saying, I did all this for them. I promised them, follow me, we're in good shape, but they didn't pay any attention. So a synonym for vigilance is attention, but here they did not pay that attention. Two other words for synonyms for vigilance, attentiveness and circumspection. I have that definition here, just in case you haven't used it in a while. Exodus chapter 23, starting with verse 13, says, "In all that I have said to you, be circumspect, and make no mention of the name of other gods, nor let it be heard from your mouth." Why would God want that? Well, we know from when he was talking to Moses and he delivered the children of Israel the Ten Commandments, he said, "I am the only God there is. I want you to make sure you don't do anything to demean me or to give me jealousy for whatever God that you have in your life." So what does circumspect mean? Circumspect means to be wary and unwilling to take risks. So if you take that definition, you say, in all that I've said to you, be wary and unwilling to take risks, not making mention of other gods. So just focusing on God intently. Other synonyms being to look out, or to observe, or observance. Passage for observance in Leviticus 18:4 says, "You shall observe my judgments and keep my ordinances to walk in them. I am the Lord your God." We talked about the thing that Moses and Joshua were talking about to the children of Israel, and they were to keep those things that God said. Those same things are being talked about here. You observe my judgments and keep my ordinances. Here's the things I said to do. Follow them. And I love when I've been going back through these Old Testament books, as I've been kind of paralleling a lot of our Wednesday and Sunday lessons. So many times when God said to do something to the children of Israel, the statement that he would say at the very end, over and over and over and over for all those laws, is, what's the substance behind what I'm telling you to do? I'm the Lord your God. That's all he had to say. I'm the Lord your God. Or if you break that down even more, remember when Moses asked God who he was, and he says, I am that I am. So it's just important that we remember who God is. Two other synonyms for vigilance. A vigil, or just basically a shortened word we talked about, or the idea of watch. Matthew chapter 25, 1-5 says, "Then the kingdom of heaven shall be like 10 virgins." We've heard this story again, but I want you to think about that as you see those ants carrying things back to their home there, and thinking about the word vigilance. "They took lamps and they went out to meet the bridegroom. Now five of them were wise and five were foolish. Those who were foolish took the lampstands and took no oil with them, but the wise took their vessels with the lamps. And while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept." So they had what they needed to have there, but some were being more prepared than others. They just had for a temporary use. Continuing on, verses 6 through 9. "And at midnight a cry was heard, 'Behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him.' Then all those virgins arose, trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said to the wise, 'Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out.' But the wise answered and said, 'No, lest there should be not enough for us and you, but go to those who sell and buy for yourselves.'" They weren't willing to even give up what they had. Verse 10. "And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterwards, the other virgin came and said, 'Lord, Lord, open to us.' But he answered and said, 'Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you.'" And then it transitions for a thing for us to think about. "Watch, therefore, for you know that neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming." Such a great story to keep us in remembrance. So now we transition to antonyms, or meanings that are an opposite to the word vigilance. Indifference and neglect. In neglect, we look at Matthew 23:23. "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone." Just like the passage in the Old Testament I talked about earlier, don't be paying attention to whether you're giving your proper sacrifices to God. Are you paying attention to the deeper meanings of heart, the things that you should be paying attention to those around you? And in the same case, Jesus is talking to these people, these leaders of Israel's religion, and he's saying, you guys are doing these little tiny things, and you're being very careful and diligent at it. But he says, you've neglected the weightier matters of the law. What are those things? Justice, mercy, and faith. And he says, these you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Carelessness is another antonym for the word vigilance. So if you're trying to be the opposite of vigilant, you can be careless. What's a passage we can use for that? Proverbs 19:16 says, he who keeps the commandments keeps his soul, but he who is careless of his ways will die. Just a little bit of not paying attention. And we've seen so many accidents happen. Sometimes loss of life with the people around us. Maybe we've even had accidents ourselves. So just a little looking off the road for a moment. Oh, that curve came up on me too fast. Or somebody ran out in front of me. Or somebody pulled out in front of me. Whatever the case is, just a little bit of carelessness can sometimes trip us up. Other antonyms for vigilance. Impulsiveness. Well, you don't just jump into things with full impulsiveness if you're trying to be very careful about things. Indiscretion or negligence. Negligence is what I'm looking at here in 2 Chronicles 29. My sons, do not be negligent now, for the Lord has chosen you to stand before him, to serve him, and that you should minister to him and burn incense. So as they were looking to the priests and the things that they would be doing, this was what they said. Don't be negligent. You have a job to do. You need to do it fully. And always, as even with some of these other passages we looked at, don't run short on what you need to be doing. Other antonyms, impulsiveness. We still got the negligence there. Another passage I have from 2 Peter 1, starting with verse 12. For this reason I will not be negligent to remind you always of these things, though you know and are established in the present truth. Yes, I think it right, as long as I'm in this tent, to stir you up by reminding you. If you go back to this and some of these other books of Peter towards the end of his life, he's still doing everything that he can to let the people that he's worked on, to bring them up into the church, and what role that he played in that, to keep saying, are you doing this? Are you doing this? Are you doing this? And how are you doing it? Because he wanted to make sure that they were right with God and not doing like we talked about, not getting into a pattern of, I'm not really worried about that. I'm happy as things are right now. Kind of transitioning a little bit here, but I was looking up in my research for the word vigilance, something I hadn't heard of before, and it came up over and over again, but just the idea of people being diligent to do something. Vigilance committees were, I'll just read what it says. As Pennsylvania and other northern states became a haven for enslaved people who sought to escape bondage, free blacks and sympathetic whites organized vigilance associations, which operated vigilance committees, sometimes called vigilant committees, to protect fugitives and potential kidnap victims. This is right after the slaves were being freed from the eastern United States, and they basically were trying to get away from the people that had them as slaves. It says, after black abolitionist David Ruggles formed the first such organization in New York City in 1835, Robert Purvis convinced his Philadelphia associates to do the same in 1837. Citizens in rural country or counties soon followed suit, and vigilance committees began to appear throughout the region. Just a caveat to today's lesson, but the idea of that is people were being either killed, harmed, injured, or were taken back to the places that they were trying to escape from, and only from the vigilance of people trying to get involved to protect them were some of these things successful. So just something to kind of add credence to the words we're talking about today. So passages that led to this lesson. Colossians chapter 4, 2, continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. I think sometimes we look back to passages like this and we think, it's in the Bible, so it must be talking about Bible things. And so when it says vigilant here, at least in the New King James Version, then it is just talking about being vigilant in your faith. It's not what it says. It says continue earnestly in prayer. So it's talking about prayer, but it says being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. So that is what God wants us to do. That idea of talking to him regularly is far more important than I think we give it credit for. I was thinking about Edith this morning and going back to being a child at my mom and dad's house when we were young. You've probably heard me talk about this before, but we often would listen to bluegrass country or bluegrass music that was talking about spiritual things on Sunday morning. And I do that today even still. It's just an encouraging way for me to start the day. But there was a song today that I had never heard by Lou Reed and a band called Carolina. It says, "It's so hard to stumble when you're down on your knees." And that worked so well with this idea of this lesson today. We stumble when we stand up and we're trying to go places that we want to go. We get tripped up by the things that sometimes life brings to us. But when you're down on your knees and you're praying to God, literally on your knees, it's almost impossible to stumble because you're stationary. And I was thinking so much, and most of you that have been part of this congregation for a long time know that before Glendon's knees started bothering him a little bit, he almost always would bend down in the front row and kneel down on his knees in prayer to God. And I saw him do that for most of my time that I've been a member of this congregation. I think that's something that God does expect from us, is that dedication, physical homage to God. And I just appreciate those people that have been able to do that over time. So continuing on, 1 Peter 5:8 also talks about this. Another passage that led to this lesson says, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour." This comes up in so many of our lessons, and it's come up in many of mine, but that idea of vigilance. What passages like this are trying to remind us of, you better be scared, because Satan wants your soul, and he wants the soul of everybody who knows you and sees you trying to work with. Be on guard, as we remember the definitions about what vigilance was in the beginning. Think about Satan in the worst case possible, and do your part to be going forward. So as we said, what is a vigil? A period of keeping awake during the time usually spent asleep, especially to keep watch or pray. Perfect passage for this. Going back to, I used the version of this in Mark instead of the one in Matthew. But starting in Mark chapter 14, 32, it says, "Then they came to a place," this is Jesus and his disciples, "which was named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, 'Sit here while I pray.'" So the question I have mentioned on here, Jesus needed support from the men around him, both for what he was about to do, but also for them to watch out for him, to tap into his power source. Do we see God as our power source? Did he leave some of the disciples in one place and take a smaller group of those he was closest to? Just that last part there, just something for you to go back and research there. But I believe fully that Jesus, when he was in prayer to God, was literally recharging the power that he had. And whenever we see him facing something, that's what he does before and after, over and over again. So that's something that we should be thoughtful about. It continues in that passage. "And he took Peter," and this is after he says he left the disciples, and it says he took Peter, James, and John with him, and he began to be troubled and deeply distressed. Some just commentary from me. Why would the Son of God feel this way? What was the problem that he was facing? And we understand what he was facing. He was God, but he was facing all of this in human form, just to show mankind today and then that he was every way tempted as we are as humans. Continued and said, "Then he said to them, 'My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death.'" He just asked them, "Stay here and watch." He didn't just say, "Just stay here and rest." He said, "Stay here and watch." But what we see is Jesus was scared of the crowds. And I put scared in here probably in quotes. He wasn't worried about the crowds, but he wanted to get back to God and say the prayers that he had in store. And he was seeing them as he was trying to do something else. So just questions for you. Continuing on, verse 35, "And he went a little further and fell on the ground and prayed that if it was all possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, 'Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not that I will, but what you will.'" So just commentary there. I think we see the humanity in Jesus in this case, but we see on top of that, Jesus' devotion to the plan is absolutely perfect. And I think we should always kind of go back and look at that. Verse 37 starting, "Then he came and found them sleeping." So he's gone up, he's prayed his heart to God. He's very troubled. He's in the worst situation I think he could be in as human form. He comes back after he told those people to stay there and watch. comes back and he says, he finds them sleeping. He says to Peter, Simon, are you sleeping? Could you not watch 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Some notes there. Jesus said this to Peter, and I put on there, but it would seem he too felt this. And what I mean by that is Jesus is praying that this time goes very quickly for him. Even as God in the flesh, I don't think this was something he looked forward to. Otherwise, we would not have this window into his life. Continues on in verse 39 through 40. And again, he went away to pray. So he went back up to where he was at. And he spoke to the same words. And when he returned, he found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. So even in this passage, it lets you know they were dealing with something that was difficult for them. But they did not know what to answer him when he asked them about it again. My comments is that even when we are made aware of their weakness by Jesus, his disciples succumb to their desires. And I don't know if we think about that sometimes, but sometimes just wanting to rest is a desire that we have to sometimes overcome. Continues on in verse 41 and 2. Then he came the third time and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? It's enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand. So Jesus basically in summary there, I've told you twice to stay awake for me, but three times you let me down, just forget it. Just imagine that situation. And I put on there that vigilance is not about quitting. John 1 says that Jesus made everything, but then God asked him to leave heaven and come to earth and be born a baby to humans, a very part of the creation that he was responsible for. So the question I'm asking myself and asking all of you, would we quit by having that role and power taken from us or being asked to become so small when we had such great power? We need to personalize some of these things and think about them. 1 Chronicles 15:2 says, then David said, Let no one may carry the ark of God but the Levites, for the Lord has chosen them to carry the ark of God and to minister before him forever. But when Christ came to man, the people who most rejected him were those very priests and Levites. And so what the point I'm trying to make here is when we see what Jesus was responsible for, how he was the one that brought so much to mankind, the very things that these religious people are doing or these leaders are doing are the things that they were supposed to do, but they're not following that. So the question to us, would we quit knowing that the people that we set up to do a job for us for all time had turned against us? Who was it that most wanted Jesus to die? It was the very leaders of Israel. After Jesus had been arrested and taken away, Mark 15:50 says, then they all forsake him and fled. So a question for us. Would you quit if you were the Son of God with all power, having spent 3 years training these men to be the keys to the kingdom, after one eternity of planning just to see them leave you? How would you feel? You know, sometimes the biggest vacuum in our lives is when we do something for somebody else and they don't reciprocate those things back to us, or they don't show any thanks at all. And those things are certainly what Jesus had to deal with on earth. As we get towards the end here, it says, after all that God promised Abraham, to the children of Israel, and to the time that he finally came to the earth to redeem his people, to save them, in Mark 15:12 through 14, we read that Pilate answered and said to them again, what then do you want me to do with him who you call the King of the Jews? And the passage says, so they cried out again, crucify him. And Pilate said to them, why, what evil has he done? But they cried all the more, crucify him, talking about Jesus. So, a question again. The very people that he, Jesus, came to save were telling their government leader to kill him. Would you quit? Originally, I had on the very people that you came to save were telling you, or telling your government leader to kill you. Would you quit? Think about the things that Jesus had to put up with. I also asked this question. Would you quit after you go all the way through exactly what God asked you to do, even to death? And still have people that weren't being followers of yours. In Mark chapter 16, 1 through 3, Now when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, Salome brought spices that they might come and anoint him very early in the morning on the first day of the week. They came to the tomb when the sun had risen, and they said among themselves, "Who will roll away the stone from the door of the tomb for us?" And these things I think about because they had no expectation that Jesus was alive. But when they looked up, they saw the stone had been rolled away, for it was very large. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man clothed on a long white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. So Mary, the other Mary, Salome, expected to see a dead Jesus. If you were Jesus, would you quit since they didn't even have faith in you? Mark 16:6-7, but he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He's risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you into Galilee. There you shall see him, as he said to you." But in Mark 16:8, it says, "So they went out quickly, and they fled from the tomb, for they trembled and were amazed. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid." The question I have for us, does fear constitute belief? If they still didn't believe in what Christ promised would happen, if you were Christ, would you just quit? Mark 16:9. "Now when they rose early on that first day of the week, he appeared to first Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven demons. She went and told those who had been with him, as they mourned and wept. And when they had heard that he was alive and had been seen by her, they did not believe." Again, would you want to work with people like this or just quit? "After that, he appeared to another form to two of them as they walked into the country, and they went and told it to the rest." What did the rest do? It says they did not believe them either. Still willing to do your job with so many non-believers? Or would it seem a good time to you to just quit? "Later, he appeared to the 11 as they sat at the table, and he rebuked their unbelief and hardness of heart because they did not believe who had seen him after he had risen." Again, would you be willing to stick to the plan with so many people failing to trust in you or believe? Or would you just quit and throw in the towel? "And he said to them, 'Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. And he who believes and is baptized will be saved, but he who does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will follow those who believe in my name and will cast out demons. They will speak with new tongues, and they will take serpents, and if they drink anything deadly, it will by no means hurt them. They will lay their hands on the sick, and they will recover.'" After so many letdowns by mankind, Jesus reaffirms his complete devotion to the plan that he has always been part of. Could we do that, or would we just quit? "So then after the Lord had spoken to them, he was received up into heaven and sat down at the right hand of God, and they went out and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them and confirming the word through the accompanying signs. Amen." I know I'm going over, but please bear with me. The weakness of mankind is our flesh. Our senses that pull us away from God are always a problem for all of us. But here, one sense that the disciples had and moved them to action was their eyes. The very sense that we so often have problems with, they saw Jesus do this. They saw the Son of God go up to heaven. They saw the Son of God talking to them and walking around after being killed on a cross. They saw the Son of God complete his will in spite of a cruel and hard people. In the end, Christ was vigilant to the end. We talked about that word for the whole lesson. But he is not ended. He lives and sustains our hopes and dreams. In the end, the apostles were vigilant even up to their own deaths, establishing the church and dying for it. In the end, the early Christians grew and did the things that Christ and the apostles told it to do, making it a living and institution that we can be a part of today. As soon as this thing gets done clicking here. In the end, you and I are where the church either stops or continues to move forward throughout time today. Vigilance is not about quitting. Will or are we being vigilant, or are we antonyms? Indifferent, neglectful, careless, impulsive, without discretion, or negligent? And the last question I ask you this morning, is the ant greater than you or me? We all have responsibilities to God. We all struggle. We all face things that are difficult for us. But vigilance is a word that we don't always think about involving ourselves in. Again, as I talked about, I went a little over today, but I just pray that these things can be useful for you. The study was useful for me. And maybe when you see an ant next time crawling around outside, you think about, wow, I need to work a little harder on what God's asked me to do, because I've got all these things around me, all these people around me that don't know Him. So if you have a need this morning, you aren't a Christian, or you are a Christian, and maybe you've not been diligent, maybe like that last little bit, the antonyms on the last page, maybe you're struggling with indifference. You're struggling with being neglectful. You're struggling with being careless or impulsive, without discretion or negligent. And even as I talked about in the beginning, maybe we're just complacent. You know, complacency may be okay if you're trying to just have everybody get along, but complacency is not progressing. So if you have a need this morning, please let it be known as we stand and sing the song or the invitation.